Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovachama Daf Nun Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached by contacting gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Nun Tes. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance at the side in the margin where we have a structural note called the Mivneh, followed by a topic heading, the Nosei. In our structural note, we feature a house shape. You will see in the Gemara text itself, our Gemara today opens up with the expression Omar Abaye. Abaye is featured with a house marking, being that it's one of our series markings, our geometric shapes that highlight series. You're going to be looking for another house marking. You will notice it if you skim down into the wide lines, the fourth wide line of the Gemara. Lo and behold, you see Abaye again. In both instances, you'll also notice shortly after his name a double underline, where the comment is made, Omru Dover Echad. Abaye observes in both instances that there are different Tanoim that have the same opinion, the same ruling in given areas. Under our immediate topic heading, the Nosei, we read as follows in our margin. Abaye Matsig, Abaye presents, as Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Rabbi Shmuel, Ke'omru Dover Echad. Rabbi Yosi Aglili, which is an opinion that we have seen already, was in our previous shiur. So in many respects, today's shiur is a continuation of that which we had seen in our previous shiur. Rabbi Yosi Aglili and Rabbi Shmuel, Ke'omru Dover Echad. They are presented as having said the same thing in Shenidon b'meshuyar. That expression we saw in our previous shiur, Shehatashlum al nezek litzmochim b'oidim kitanim. Nidon b'meshuyar means that damage wrought to plants in their early stages. Plants, vegetables, fruits, grains in their early stages. Yehei kafi sheyu shavim bizman hakotzir. The payment for the damage will be in accordance with their value at the time of harvesting. In other words, in one word, we say future. You look at their future value right now and charge the offender accordingly. We mentioned in our previous shiur that we would be making references to sources, particularly a Tanaic source that we saw at the bottom, beginning at the bottom of Nun Ches Omid Beis. We'll be making references to that on a few occasions in today's shiur. So bear that point in mind. As usual, Gemara learning is never in isolation, so that any given shiur is usually a follow-up of that which was studied either in a previous shiur or in a previous part of the Masichta being dealt with. Now the Gemara. Omar Abaye. Note that we have a long point here. Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Rabbi Shmuel, Omru Dovar Echad. Rabbi Yosi Aglili and Rabbi Shmuel have the same approach in calculating values of damage. Rabbi Yosi Aglili, Hod Amoran. Rabbi Yosi Aglili is that which we've already made reference to. And here we have a little arrow indicating on the side of the Gemara text indicating to go back to Nun Ches Omid Beis. And if you do that, you'll find yourself three lines from the bottom with a corresponding arrow where the source that we featured discussed an animal destroying Chaziz, Shachas. Shachas is grains in their early stage of development. And Rabbi Yosi Aglili says, Nidon b'meshuyar shebo. And at that point, Rashi says, toward the bottom of the Rashi commentary on Nun Ches Omid Beis, Rayan es ha-noisar L'fimah shetale kol aruga varuga bimei hakotzir mishalim. You look at that which remains after the damage in terms of what its future value would be at the time of harvest, and how much less that area is worth now as a result of the damage done by the animal. So, as we said earlier, in one word, future. We factor in the future value. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yishmael Desanyo. Now, Rabbi Yishmael's opinion will be presented in this upcoming Tanaic source. I just want to point out ahead of time that we're going to read the source. It's not going to be obvious from reading the source itself that that's Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. Following the frame section, the Gemara is going to dismiss something that someone might have thought. And only after about five lines of Gemara after the source, the Gemara will then finally come up with the point that we're trying to make. So, with a little patience, we continue. Regarding Rabbi Yishmael, Desanya, there's a pasuk that says, and we've seen this pasuk many times in this Masechta, Meitav Sadeu Meitav Karmo Yishalem. When damage is done, so compensation, if it's not going to be made in cash terms, is made from the best of his lands, best of his vineyards. Meitav Sadeu Shel Nizak U'Meitav Karmo Shel Nizak. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. It's made, the compensation is made in terms of land quality. If cash payment is not going to be made, you evaluate the payment by, as far as the Torah is concerned, based on the top quality land in the possession of the victim, the nizak, the victim. That is as far as a more or less literal translation is concerned. The next two lines we've placed in brackets because we're really de-emphasizing Rabbi Akiva for our current discussion. But it's here, so we read it anyway. Rabbi Akiva, Oimer Lobo Akosuv Elo Ligvois Lenezikin Min Ha'idis Vekal V'chomer Lehegdish. The posuk that speaks about compensation, it's made for damage from Idis, from the top quality land. We'll suggest the top quality land of the Mazik. And the Kalvachomer Lehegdish, and all the more so when it comes to the compensation regarding the Beis Hamikdash. I emphasize again that the Rabbi Akiva section of this source is not the focus of our discussion. In the meantime, we saw Rabbi Shmuel who said that payment is made in terms of Meitav Sodeu Shanizak, that if it's going to be a land payment made by the offender, he's going to pay in terms of the victim's top quality land. As we've seen earlier in the Masichta, you could have a situation where the offender's poorest quality land corresponds to the victim's top quality land. He'll pay the offender will pay from his poorest quality land because it corresponds to the top quality land in the possession of the victim. These are all topics we've discussed in the past, though. The Gemara comments, "Velo tema kravivi bar oven," and don't think to learn the source we just read that referred to meitav of the nizak, best quality land of the nizak. Don't think to learn like Rav Idi said, "The Omer Rav Idi bar oven." Rav Idi bar Oven wanted to describe Rabbi Shmuel in such a way that we don't want to say. Well, what did he say? That the source is talking about kegon she'ochla aruga bein hu arugos, where the animal damaged a row amongst the rows. V'lo yadinon ikusha havoi ishmeina havoi, and we don't know the quality of the land that the quality of the produce that the animal destroyed. Was it poor quality? Was it rich quality? The Omar Kum Shlim Shmeina Bemeitav Deika Hashta. According to Rav Idi, the Posuk in the Torah is saying, well, being that you don't know what was actually damaged, pay from your best quality that exists right now. Dehochi Lo Amrinon. We don't rule like that. Namely, that when you're in doubt as to what was damaged, you must pay from your top quality. Why don't we say that? My taima. Because, Hamotzi Mechaveiro, all of Araya, that there's a major principle in settling areas of doubt, and the principle says that motzi mechaver, the one who is trying to extract, one is trying to receive something. In this case, the victim is trying to receive payment, to extract money from the offender. Olav haraya, the motzi, in this case, the victim of the damage, upon him is the burden of proof. Well, if he doesn't know if it's not known which quality row was destroyed, he'd have to prove that it was his best quality in order to extract from the offender a top quality compensation. Ella, rather, the appearance of Rabbi Shmuel above is not dealing where there's a matter of doubt, but rather, b'metav d'lekameh. Metav in the source referred to, metav in future terms. Umayniu, and what do we mean by that? Kihech d'solik, in accordance with the value of that which will appear, which will grow, and ready for harvest at the time of harvest. If we look in the Rashi, there's a Rashi, you might see little stars in the Rashi, come about a third of the way down. And we read in the middle of the Rashi, there he says, Elamai, mate of the Nizak, the Komer Rabbi Shmuel. What did Rabbi Shmuel mean when he referred to top quality of the Nizak, and the offender pays in accordance? Lav besfeka mairi. He's not talking about a situation of doubt. Vahochi ko'omar. And what Rabbi Shmuel is saying is, Oisa ruga sha'ochla, the animal ate a row of produce. And the animal ate produce, might be grains, vegetables that were very early in their development. Yishalem kfima shehoisu ruyo lahativ ulashpich lekameh. And here you see the word metav woven into Rashi, lahativ, the value of the damage is in accordance with the amount it would be worth in the future, to increase, to improve in value. Right now, we're talking about the row of vegetation that the animal ate, when we know which row it ate. It ate a row of vegetation in its early stage of development. Rabbi Shmuel is telling you that you will pay in accordance with that row, its value at the time of harvest. Fully mature, developed fruits or vegetables or grains. Omar Mar. Here we quote from that which was mentioned which we learned in our previous shiur. And I just hope it's, before we go on, I just want to make it clear that the previous discussion was to show that Rabbi Shmuel, who just got finished saying that we make an evaluation in terms of its future value, is the same as Rabbi Yossi HaGlili that we saw in the source above and at the bottom of Nun Ches Amud Beis. And that was Abaye's point, that they, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili and Rabbi Shmuel, say the same thing. Look at future value. Omar Mar, we continue in the Gemara, the star on the side of the Gemara text indicates to look above for the corresponding star, and you see where this quote comes from. Rav Shimon Yiro Omer, Mishum Rav Shimon, Bamed Vomamurim, when is evaluation made in terms of the plant value as part of a field in which it's growing? We mentioned often in our previous year that an evaluation was made by looking at the field, how much it was worth before the damaged row that was damaged, and how much that parcel of land is worth now after the damage, minus that row. That method of evaluation, and what I just said, by the way, I presented in very simplistic terms. We don't have to review the entire method of evaluation that we discussed in our previous year, but you got the sense of evaluating in terms of ground or land value. That method is, so Reb Shimon says, that's b'med v'amurim sh'ochla luve gifan v'ichure tenim. When the damage was done to the grapevine, when the grapes were in their luve stage, a very early stage when it's the blossom is still on the plant. Namely, even the grapes in their early stage are not really recognizable. And likewise, with regard to figs, in that stage, the parallel stage is called Yichurei Tainan. In our previous shiur, we mentioned that there were three stages of development referred to here. And on the side, in our margin, we've noted them under the heading Dargois, levels, 1, Luvin, 2, Smodar, 3, Bosar. These are terms that are relevant to the grapes, and with regard to the figs, you have Yichurei. Reb Shimon ben Yehuda mentioned that the land type calculation is made when the damage was done to the grapevines when the grapes were in the Luvin stage. We infer, Hosmodar, if damage took place when the grapes were further in their development, they reached the Smodar stage. That's a stage at which the perach, the blossom has fallen off, and the grapes are noticeable in a very small size. Royen oison ki'ilu anovim oindois libotzer. You would infer that at that point, you look at the grapes as if they are fully developed, fully ripe and ready for libotzer, means for harvest. So when do you look at them as part of the ground? According to Shimon Yehuda, when they're in that Luvin state. But in the Smodar state, you would then look at them as fully developed. Amo Seifa. Continue reading in the source, and what do you see? Ochlo pagim oiboisar. In fig development, the equivalent of bosar is called pagim. If the animal ate destroyed, damaged figs or grapes at this level of development, then now there are two. You notice we have a little brackets. This is a term that's added by the Gemara. The original source simply said ochlo pagim oiboisar royen oison. But for emphasis purposes, the Gemara adds into the source the following. We just said that when do you evaluate something in its future terms? When it destroyed the crops at the Smodar stage. That was inferred from the earlier statement. The Seifa statement speaks about looking at something in its future final stage of development, but that's only if the destruction took place at the Bosar level. What about at the Smodar level? What would you infer from here? And the Smodar level is earlier than the Bosar. What do we infer? Ha Smodar Royanoison Kamohi Yofe Vekamohisa Yofe. You look at the value of the land before the damage and how much less that land is worth with the damage. That's the we call the land evaluation method. Looking at things as they are now. How much was the land worth before the damage, and how much is the land worth right now? No factoring in future values. Take a look at the Gemara as we've marked it. You notice the diamonds. The diamonds are featured on the side in our margin under the Mivneh heading. The word Ha has been emphasized. Diyukim b'divrei Reb Shimon ben Yehuda. These are inferences from the comments of Reb Shimon ben Yehuda. Shinirim soisrim. They appear to be contradictory. Be'inyan hashuma benezek behemo lismodar. How much do you pay for an animal having damaged smodar? If you make your inference from the first statement, you see that smodar is treated by looking at the future value. If you look at the seifa statement, you see that the smodar method, the inference from the seifa leads you to say that the smodar evaluation is based on current value. Omar, we continue in the Gemara. Omar Ravina, kroich utni. Kroch means to add smodar into the source itself and teach as follows. Bamed vamumurim. When do we use the current method of evaluation based on land value pre-damage and current value after the damage. That is sha'achla, bizman sha'achla luve gefan v'churi te'inim. Only then do we apply the that method of evaluation. Aval ochla smodar pagin ubosar. However, if it ate the crops at the smodar stage, at the pagin stage, or at the bosar stage, royan oisan kiilu anovim oindos libotzer. We look at the damage in terms of how much would it be worth when it's ready for harvest. I don't know if I emphasized earlier, but it was quite obvious that the Luvin and the Smodar stages is before it's ripe. So too Bosar. Bosar is also quite a bit early in the development, but it's relatively speaking, it's the latest of these three stages. But in the case of Smodar and Bosar, we look at them as if they are, we evaluate them in terms of how much would they be worth in the future when they're ready for harvest. This is the presentation that we're making of Rav Shimon ben Yehuda. The Gemara asks, well, hachi, if that be the case, then Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, hainu Rav Yehoshua. Use the star that you see to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. Find the corresponding star, and you're going to find yourself way at the top line. The top line of our Omid, we saw Smodar, and we didn't emphasize before, but the bow tie shape around the word Smodar is right is necessary for the Gemara right now. I hope your eye catches the bow tie above Smodar, and Rabbi Yeshua said, and notice what was dashed underline, Ki'ilu hein oimdi arnovim oimdi shlibotzer. The bow tie we had most recently, this is part of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. What did we dash underline with his Smodar? Ki'ilu arnovim oimdi shlibotzer. What is the Gemara asking right now? The two of them that are in the same Tanaic source are saying the same thing. By way of Tanaic sources, you won't have in the same Tanaic source two opinions stated by name that are saying the same thing. And if you set up Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda as saying, look at Smodar in terms of its future value, well, that's what Rabbi Yeshua already said in that same source. Ostensibly, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda is coming to argue on that which was said earlier. Where is there a point of difference? The Gemara answers, Ikabi now, there is a point of difference. However, it's not something that you can see explicitly in the words. But there's a point of difference, and that point of difference is called Kichesh Gufna. Velo Mesaimi. However, it's not clear who says what. Abaye Omar Misaimi Umisaimi. Abaye says, what are you talking about? It's very clear who holds what. We didn't explain yet what Kichesh Gufna is, but I just read a couple words of Gemara to give you a flavor of what we're encountering. So the first opinion says, there's a difference between Shimon Yehuda and Rabbi Yeshua. He says, but the difference of opinion concerns the topic of Kichesh Gufna. Kichesh Gufna. Let us take a look at Rashi. Rashi is a little more than halfway down the Rashi commentary. Kichesh Gufna, lenakos, to subtract, min hatashlumin, from the amount that the offender will have to pay. Mashi akhishu anovim begifanim im yamdusham ala botzir. How much depreciation do grapes create in the vines from which they're growing if left till maturity? What do you mean by depreciation? Shetamid yonkin lichlua hagefen. The grapes in their development are fed, so to speak. They're they're sustained. Their nutrition comes from the vine on which they grow. The growth of grapes is dependent on how much they can, how much energy they can draw from the vine. That drawing of energy, of nutrients, is called lichluach. Literally means the dampness, the freshness of the vine. There is vine depreciation every year that there's grape development. So more and more of the vine's productive powers is sapped away. I like the pun there in the sapped away. I think it's quite relevant. So if the grapes in this particular case were consumed by the animal, this destructive animal, in their early stage of development, there is a certain amount of, we'll say, of collateral benefit that the victim has, in that there won't be as much depreciation in his vine value as there would have been had the grapes reached maturity. Do we subtract that from the amount that the offender will have to pay? Do we say to the offender, look, you have to pay for the value of those grapes, that amount of grapes, had they reached full development, period? Or do you say, you will pay for the value of the grapes in their full development, however, you're entitled to subtract the amount of kichesh gufna that the nizak benefits from, that this lack of depreciation in vine value this particular year, because this animal ate the grapes in their early stage of development. This concept of kichesh gufna, though, has broader applications than just a grapevine. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. This topic heading is here to introduce that which Abaye is saying now, and you'll notice a few lines from here. Abaye appears in a house marking. So our introduction, the topic heading that we have, we've called kichesh gufna. We'll call it the vine depreciation. Kichesh literally means weakening, the weakening of the vine in terms of the sapping away of its nutrients. Abaye matzig tanoim. Abaye will present tanoim shesoivrim, that hold the betashlum hanezek, that when damage is paid, menakim mechoivas hamazik, we subtract from the obligation of the offender, tashlumim asidim shenechsichu, these are future payments or values that are saved, mei hanizak, that the nizak, that the victim is not going to have to expend, ekev hanizik, because of the damage. It's a situation we can call it ironic, that because of the damage sustained by the victim, he in fact saves monies and expenditures that he otherwise would have experienced. One example, kichesh gufno, which we already described in length. A second example, hoitzos yoledes, a woman pregnant who ultimately gives birth to a child. There are expenses. If a woman, in our Gemara will refer to a woman who was damaged and miscarriage was the result. The result of the damage was a miscarriage. We call that demei vlados. But a woman who carries to full pregnancy, if she would have given birth at the end of her pregnancy, what are the expenses? Chaya, a midwife expense to help in the delivery of the child. Mizonos is a reference to the food that a woman increases in consumption while her pregnancy advances. So that when a woman is in her later stages of pregnancy, she eats more. That food costs money. She, in this case, doesn't reach that because at an earlier stage, she was caused to miscarry. So that's amount that is saved. So we mentioned midwife cost is not going to be paid out and food costs are not going to be paid out. That is the equivalent of the kichesh gufna that we mentioned before. In our Gemara, we were looking for a difference between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. So we had a first opinion that says they disagree regarding the subtraction of damage amount because of the Kichesh Gufna. But the first approach said we don't know who says what. Abaye, we pick up the Gemara on the last narrow line of the Gemara text. Abaye Omar, Misaimi u Misaimi. It's very clear who says what. Mantano de Chayesh the Kichesh Gufna. Who is the Tana that considers subsequent depreciation of vine? Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. It is Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Desanya, lo and behold, who do you see here? Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Oimer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. He quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya saying, Oinus, in the case of rape, Eino Mishalem Esatzar. A man rapes a girl, a Nara. The Gemara mentions that different payments have to be made. But one payment that he does not, that she, that is not made, is the pain value. When a rape takes place, there are a series of different payments that have to be made. If it's the case of a nara, so there's a 50 kesef fine that the Torah mentions, and in addition to that, there's an embarrassment payment. If there's medical expenses, there's that has to be paid, and there's also the tsar, the pain amount. However, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says that pain, the pain value, is not paid. Why? When this girl gets married, she's going to have intimacy with her husband, and she's going to have tsar anyway. It's inevitable. He, therefore, is looking, in terms of evaluating costs, he's subtracting the tsar from the set of payments that have to be made, because that's going to happen in the future anyway. Omru lo, the rabbis disagree with Reb Shimon Yehuda, and they say, Eino deima nivelus beratzon lenivelus beinus. You can't compare the amount of pain or discomfort experienced by a girl who's having intimacy with her husband, that's beratzon, willingly, with her husband, with a case of a rape. For our purposes, though, let's emphasize what we've dashed underlined. The words, shesoifo litzter. In the end, it's going to come to that anyway. That was Reb Shimon ben Yehuda's opinion. So he factors in, we'll say, future values and deducts. So that in the mechlukis before between Reb Yoshua and Reb Shimon Yehuda, who factors in depreciation of vine that would have been experienced and is now not the case, and therefore we can subtract it. That is the approach of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Rabbi Yoshua, he disagrees. Omar Abaye, Hani Tanoi, the Tanoim that we'll see shortly, we haven't seen them yet, for Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, Omru Dovar Echad. They say the same thing. They have the same opinion. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Hodamoram, we already discussed him, the idea of looking at future values and making deductions based on depreciation, etc. Hani Tanoi Maihi, the reference to other Tanoim. Who does Abai have in mind? Desanya. The following deals with what we mentioned before in our introductory remarks, the Demei Vlados, the case of a miscarriage. And Rabbi Desanya, Rabbi Yossi, Yomer Nefi Chaya. When the offender who caused the miscarriage has to pay, so he'll pay the amount of the value of the babies that were miscarried minus the ultimate midwife expenses. Benazai Omer Nechi Mezonos. Benazai says the amount of Vlados minus the food expenses, the increased food cost that the woman would have experienced. Mandomar Nechi Chaya Kosheke Nechi Mezonos. The opinion of Rabbi Yossi, who said you subtract midwife costs, certainly you're going to subtract the increased food costs that have been saved. Umandomar Nechi Mezonos, the opinion of Ben Azai, who said we subtract the food costs, aval nechi chayo lo, the midwife cost, the midwife fee, that the nizak doesn't have a right to, we can't subtract that from the demei vlados. The mazik will pay the demei vlados, he'll say, according to Ben Azai, minus the food, but he's not going to subtract the midwife costs. Why not? And in other words, the nizak will benefit that. Why is it that the offender cannot subtract the midwife cost? The Omar Lay, the nizak, the victim, can say, as my wife, Itzodidi, my wife, Pekichahi velo mibayachaya. She is skilled and knows how to proceed with self-delivery. She doesn't need a midwife to help her out. And therefore, it's not a cost that I would have encountered anyway. So it's not something that your damage is saving me. Rav Papa of Rav Huna Rav Yeshua, Ovid Uvda Kavose de Rav Nachmon Beshishim. Now, you might be wondering, where did Rav Nachmon come from? So this is one of the great advantages of using Gemara markings. You use the arrow that you see to the side of the Gemara text, and you see there's an indication to go back to Nun Ches Amud Beis. And if you use that, take advantage of the markings, and you find an equivalent equivalent type arrow, a squiggled arrow, you'll notice in the last quarter of the page, Rav Nachmon, whose name is dashed, is a dot underlined, just like we do over here, in order to help you focus on that. He spoke about damage done by man, a man who causes damage, the 60 times method of evaluation that we expanded upon in our previous shiur is the way to go. In other words, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Rishua say that when it comes to Odom HaMazik, not just animals that create damage, but man also who creates damage, you use the 60 method of evaluation. That, of course, was as opposed to the Reish Galusa's ruling that we featured in that part of the Gemara back on Nun Ches Amud Beis in our previous shiur. Lishno Achrino, a different approach. Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, Shamu, they evaluated Dikla, a palm tree that was destroyed, Agav Ketina Da'ara, as part of a small piece of land. How much was the land worth before the damage took place to the palm tree growing upon it? And how much is the land worth after the damage took place? Now, and the Gemara says, now rules, the approach taken by Rav Papa and Rav Huna is true when you're dealing with an Armo-type palm tree. The idea here that is that Rav Papa and Rav Huna, when evaluating a damage, they don't look at the item that's damaged in pure isolation, but they look at it in terms of the we'll say the surrounding perspective. This approach is in contrast with the Reish Galusa. The Hilchasa Kareish Galusa, Kavasi the Reish Galusa, Bedikla Parsa. Dikla Parsa, Rashi says, Choshev Ma'od V'nisham B'fnei Atzmo. It's a different kind of palm tree, the Persian palm tree. If it's damaged, it's evaluated in isolation because it is such a significant and important type tree. Reference to Reish Galusa, of course, use your markings. You can see the double star indicating to go back to Nun Ches Amud Beis, where the Reish Galusa issued his ruling. Now we have an incident involving Eliezer Ze'ira. So here's a story. Eliezer Ze'ira, and you can note that the length of the story, it takes you till the second wide line on Omid Beis. The relevance of the story that we're about to learn will become quite obvious as we get into the Gemara itself. So, Eliezer Ze'ira, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Havasiei Masani Uchmi. He was wearing black shoes. Black shoes, Rashi points out, is the way of mourners. It's mashma that, in general, Jews did not wear black shoes. Tosfos elaborates on this topic. We're not going to focus on that now, but just to be aware that there's a longer discussion on the issue of the black shoes found in the Tosfos. So you have him wearing these unusual shoes, the shoes that a mourner would wear. V'koy b'shuka de Nahardo, and he was standing in the market of Nahardo. He's clearly not mourning over one of the close relatives, otherwise he wouldn't be walking in the streets. He would be in the house of mourning. So you have him wearing these black shoes, the sign of mourning, in the markets of Nahardo. Ashkechu debei reish galusa. Members of the exilarch's house found him. V'yomru lei maishno hani masani. What's the reason? Literally, what's different about these shoes? Meaning, why are you being different than everyone else wearing these shoes? Omar lehu dekoma vilna ayushalayim. I'm mourning over the destruction of Jerusalem. Well, it's important to be aware of the destruction of Jerusalem, but I'm sure it's quite obvious that the demonstration of one's mourning is not something that is practiced by the general public. So, Omru Le, they asked him, At Hashivis Lisabuli Ayushlam, are you so, literally, so important, or are you on such a high level of piety that you demonstrate your mourning over Jerusalem in a public fashion? Sover you are Rahave. They thought that this man is behaving in a haughty fashion. You are Rahave is an expression that describes excessive public demonstration of piety. So we're explaining it's a form of haughtiness, that here I'm more pious than all the rest of you. And that's what they thought. Asua, and the Talmud has no patience for that kind of behavior. This isn't the only place in the Gemara that Yuhara appears. Throughout the Shas, there are references to this time and time again. So they figured this guy is... behaving in an unacceptable fashion. So what did they do? They brought him, Asua, they brought him to Chavshua, and they incarcerated him. They bound him up. Omar Lahu, Eliezer Zero says, what are you doing to me? Gavur Abon, I'm a great man. And now this statement, I think that you should understand, as you'll see as the story unfolds, he's not saying this as an expression of haughtiness per se, but rather, I am a person of standing, and yes, I am preoccupied with the destruction of Jerusalem, and I'm not doing this as an act of haughtiness, but I'm on a level that would warrant me to wear the black shoes. Omrule, Mino Yadinon. How do we know that you're a man of high standing? Omar Lahu, so Eliezer Zero says to them, O atun bo minoi milsa, o ano iboi minaychu milsa. If you want to judge my level, so level of greatness is determined, he says, by either you asking me a question, and let's see if I can answer your question, or I asking you a question. Omru le, so the members of the Reish Galusa household said, Boyat, you raise a question. It's interesting to note that back on Daf Mem Omer Aleph, there was an incident where Rava had praised Rav Nachman about a particular individual as being great, and Rav Nachman, in trying to evaluate his greatness, says, let me hear a question that you can ask. Omar Lahu. So Eliezer Zira says to them, Haiman de kotz kufra mai mishalem. One who cuts down kufra. Kufra is a reference to dates in an early stage of development. We refer to bosar earlier in reference to grape development. So this is the equivalent. There are dates in a bosar level. It's true it was the third level of development that we spoke about earlier, but it's far from ripeness. So someone cut down a palm tree in the bosar level of development, or he cut down someone else's dates at their kufra or bosar level of development. How is payment to be made? Omru le mishalim de me kufra. They pay what they're worth right now. And Rashi says it's practically nothing. People don't buy that. They're not going to pay money for dates in their kufra level of development. Well, so he asks them, what, that's what you say? They should pay to make kufra vohavu tamri, but they're going to become fully ripe after a while. Omrule, so they said, okay, mishalim, to make tamri, so let the offender pay the full value. The value that they will be worth when fully ripe. Omar lahu. So Eliezer Zira said back to them, v'halav tamri shokaminei, but the damager didn't take from them, didn't destroy their fully developed dates. Is it fair then to charge them for fully developed dates when that's not what he destroyed? So if you're not accepting any of our answers, then you say how payment is to be made. Omar lahu b'shishim. You use the Shishim method of evaluation. Rashi, he adds as Rashi always does, the key point that you don't see in the words of the Gemara. So let's look at Rashi together on the third line from the top. Shishim, ima karka. You look at the value of the tree on the ground that it's growing from, and then you look at it, let's say 60 times that. How much would people pay for 60 times that with the ground? Da'kol b'chlau, Rashi says, Sha'kene karka b'peirosel, noisein einof k'tsas b'shevach shel achar zman. People who buy land with fruit trees growing, they when they make the purchase, they take into consideration the Shevach Shel Achar Zman. We dashed underline that in our marked Gemaras, our marked Rashi, to show the tie-in to our Sukya. You look at the value of the tree in terms of 60 times that amount. How much would 1/60th of it be then? And what is the value of that before the damage, and how much is it worth now? Omru le, we continue in the Gemara. Man Omar Kavosech, they said to Eliezer Zira, who says like you say? Omar lehu, ha Shmuel, chayu beis dino kayam. The great Amora Shmuel, an expert in dine momentus, is alive and his court is in existence. Go ask them. Shodru kamei de Shmuel. The question was sent to Shmuel, and Omar lehu shapir kum lehu b'shishim. They responded that he, Eliezer Zira, is saying, well, shapir means well, fine, good. He's saying properly that the evaluation is made using the 60 method. And what happened at the end? V'shavku, and they let him free. Initially, we have these little arrows to highlight what initially happened, where we dashed on v'chav shua, and at the end of the story, v'shavku, and they released him. We have as a topic heading on the side of the Gemara a very brief topic heading. Let me read the topic heading together with you. It says Psak shel Rabbi Shimon, the ruling of Rabbi Shimon, Ochla peros gemurim, Mishalemes peros gemurim. In our Mishnah, we saw Rabbi Shimon that said if the animal ate fully ripe fruits, or whatever it ate, the vegetation that ate was fully ripe, payment is made in terms of what it ate. Rabbi Shimon doesn't evaluate things in terms of a background or a perspective, but if what was eaten was fully ripe, that's what you pay. The Gemara. My taima, what's the basis for Rabbi Shimon? The Gemara answers, Hod yomer rachmona ubir b'stei acher melamed sheshomen al gav hasodeh, that which we have said in the past, that the pasuk in the Torah that says ubir b'stei acher, and it teaches me that I evaluate in using the perspective method. In other words, not looking in isolation at the item that was destroyed, but looking at it in context. Hani mili, says Reb Shimon, that is true, midi detzorach lesodeh, something that still needs the ground for its continued development. Notice the pasuk said, ubir bisdei acher, something that needs the sodeh, something that needs the field. Hani, however, fully ripe grapes or fully ripe produce, since they don't need the ground anymore for their further development, they've reached maturity. Beinayu boy shlumi, payment is made beinayu as they are. Omer avuna bar chia, omer of yirmiel bar abba, don rav kerebi meir uposak hilchasa kerebi shimon. Don rav, that means rav, did a literally maisa ovad is the lashon that you can see in Rashi. That means he acted in accordance with Rabbi Meir. We haven't seen what that's referring to. That's in the next line of Gemara. But it's pointed out that Rav acted in accordance with Rabbi Meir. Uposak hilchasa k'Rabbi Shimon. Rashi on the expression posak hilchasa klomar limei v'tamidim shalochi Rabbi Shimon halocha psuka l'doros. It means that Rav taught his students that the halachic ruling will follow Rabbi Shimon. These are two, I would say, unrelated points, but we're describing Rav and how he looked at things halachically. So in terms of the case in which Rabbi Meir appears, Rav himself acted in accordance with Rabbi Meir. In terms of Rabbi Shimon, Rav issued a taught his students that you shall rule like Rabbi Shimon. Two separate cases. What are we referring to? Don Rav Kerebi Meir, that Rav acted in accordance with Rabbi Meir Desanya. And here we have a Tanaic source that deals with the topic of Ksubas Isha. Ksubas Isha is the financial guarantee a woman receives from her husband upon getting married. In the case of either his death or his divorcing her, she receives financial compensation, and that financial compensation is backed up or is in terms of land that he is in possession of. She basically has a lien upon his properties. If he should want to sell his properties, and the sale should be binding, and that she would not, let's say, cancel the sale, she would have to, let's say, sign on or approve the sale through signing on to the contract. Now, with that background in mind, we have a source, and there are a couple opinions of the source. We, of course, want to focus on Rabbi Meir. That's why our dash underlining will highlight that. Let's read the source. Kosav l'rishon v'lo chosmolo, l'sheni v'chosmolo. Man writes a contract up to sell a parcel of land to a rishon, to a first party, and she does not sign on to that. It's pointed out that the sale is land that is, let's say, dedicated or earmarked for her ksuba. That's the expression that Rashi uses here, Soda hamyuchedes l'ksuba. So the man, the husband, tried to sell a parcel of land that was earmarked for her ksuba, and she didn't sign on. L'sheni v'chosmalo, however, the husband turned to a second individual and offered the deal to him, and she signed on. Ovda ksubaso divrei Rabbi Meir. She loses out her ksuba payment from, certainly from that parcel of land, and as Rashi says, she cannot say The only reason I signed on was to make my husband feel good. I didn't want to get into a argument with him, or disagreement, or strife. That's called, in Hebrew we say, nachas ruach osisi labali. I wasn't serious, I wasn't really consenting, I just didn't want to start a fight. Anyway, that is not something she can claim according to Rebbe Meir. And why not? Well, look, with regard to the first attempt to sell the land, she in fact did not sign on. She wasn't concerned so much with the domestic civility at that point. She wasn't concurring with her husband's attempted sale there. And here she does concur. So we see that this is a serious agreement on her part. And that's why the result is, according to Rebbe Meir, Ovda Ksubasa. And as just to repeat, and she can't claim, oh, I signed on only to make him feel good. Rabbi Yehuda, he disagrees and says, "Oh, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yecholehi Shetoymar Nachas Ruach Osisi Lebaili, Atem Ma Lochem Olai." I sign only to make him feel good. She says to the purchasers, "You have no claim against me. I still have my ksuba that preempts preceded your purchase." Again, we emphasize that Rav ruled like Rebbe Meir, that by not signing on to the first attempted sale, and yes, signing on to the second, she is truly parting with her claim to that land. We continue in the Gemara, Uposak Yuchasuk Rebbe Shimon Ki Hadisnan. Rav's ruling, like Rebbe Shimon, is our Rebbe Shimon in our Mishnah, that which was taught Rebbe Shimon Omer Ochle Peres Gemurim, if the animal consumed fully ripe vegetation, Mishalemes Peres Gemurim, the payment is in terms of the value of fully ripe vegetation. Im saw, if it ate a saw of that crop, saw is a measure, a particular measure, so then you pay a saw worth of that crop. Im sosayim, if it ate two saw, sosayim, then the value of two saw is what has to be paid. As we continue, we encounter now a new Mishnah. On the side of the one, there are no sour topic heading. We've written the following. Ha-gdoshos tevua. Ha-gdoshos to create a pile of grain. B'soich rishus chavero. Someone piled up his grain in someone else's domain. We'll see a discussion concerning shelo birshus, without permission, and birshus, with permission. We've highlighted with a double underline the expressions poter, exemption, from having to make compensation, as opposed to chayov in the subsequent case. The Mishnah. Hamagdish besoch ste chavero, shelo birshus. A person piled up grains in his friend's field without permission. The ochlusan b'emtu shabala sodeh, and the field owner's animal ate those grains, called the uninvited grains. Potter, the owner of the field whose animal ate the grains, does not need to make compensation. V'mhuzka bohen, if the animal of that bal hasodeh, got hurt on those grains, slipped and fell and got hurt on those grains, Baal HaGodesh Chayav, the owner of the grains, has to pay for the damage that the animal sustained. V'im Higdish Barashus, if the piling up of the grains in the Baal HaSodeh's property was with permission, and the animal of the Baal HaSodeh ate the grains, the grains that were invited, chayav, then the Baal HaSodeh has to pay for the consumption of those grains. Now, what made the Baal HaSodeh obligated? What made him obligated for his animals eating of those grains? It seems by his merely giving permission to come in. Said, yeah, come in, you can put your grains in my property. Lema tnan delo kerebi. Should we say that the end of this Mishnah that mentions that the Baal HaSodeh has to pay for the eating of the Gadish, of the grains, simply by having given Rishus, permission to the grain owner to enter, well, that's not in accordance with Rebbe, Kerebi. If you were to cite Rebbe's opinion, Omar, but Rebbe holds, Ad Shikabel of Baal HaBayis Lishmor, the Baal HaBayis, the field owner, would not be obligated until he accepts in explicit terms, I will watch your item. But prior to formal acceptance of responsibility, the Baal HaSodeh would not be chayav to compensate. And that our Mishnah indicates that he is chayav to he is obligated to compensate. So, would you say then that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rebbe? Omar Rav Popo. Rav Popo responds by saying that our Mishnah can very well be in accordance with Rebbe as well. Our Mishnah is talking about a very unique or specific case. Hacha, the Mishnah which spoke about permission being given to enter the field, was Benotar Beidori Askinon, a guard that's appointed to watch the piles of grain of the different members of that agricultural community. Notar is one who is hired to be a guard, Beidori, of the granary. He is the one that said, bring in your grains. The Kevan du Omar Leh, since the guard told Ayel Ugadosh, come in and pile up your grains, Ayel va'anter lahu, his statement of enter is includes, incorporates, come in and I will watch your grains. So therefore, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, there is the equivalent of explicit acceptance of responsibility, and therefore if an animal in that locale ate the grains, the grain owner deserves compensation. The Mishnah. This Mishnah now moves on to the topic of damage done by fire. And we note under our topic heading, Mesiras Eish L'Chiri Sheita V'Kotten, the handing over of some form of fire to an deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor. People that we'll refer to as the inepts. HaSholeches HaBe'era, one who literally sends or gives over, Be'era is a form of fire. I am deliberately vague on the topic. We have to wait for the Gemara to elaborate on that. But one who does thusly, beyond Chiri Sheita V'Kotten, gives the form of fire to the deaf, mute, imbecile, or minor, Potter B'dinei Odom V'Chayov B'dinei Shemayim. As far as damage that may result, the individual who gave over the fire is exempt from compensating for damage in terms of earthly court terms, V'Chayov B'dinei Shemayim, but in heavenly terms, he is viewed as guilty. Sholach biyad pikeach, hapikeach chayav. If someone transferred his fire to the hands of a capable individual, a pikeach is a normal, a man of sound mind, healthy individual, chayav. Then the hapikeach chayav, the damage that results is his responsibility, not the original owner's responsibility. Echon hevi es ha'ur ve'echon hevi es ha'etzim. Someone put, let's say, a fire down on the ground, and someone else brought the wood, and eventually the fire spread and caused damage. Hamevi es ha'etzim chayav. The one who brought the fuel, he brought it second. He is the one that bears responsibility. He has to compensate for the damage. Echon hevi es ha'etzim ve'echon hevi es ha'ur. If you reverse the order of things, one person put down wood, and another person brought along the fire, and damage eventually resulted, Hamevi Yesur Chayav, the one who brought the fire is responsible. Bo Acher Veliba, someone else came afterwards and started to fan the fire. Liba is the process of fanning a fire, blowing upon the fire, using a bellows to fan the fire. Hamalave Chayav, the one who fanned the fire bears responsibility. Libsa Haruach Kulan Turin. If it's a wind that caused the fanning of the fire, then all the previous individuals are exempt. Omar Reish Lakish Mishmei Dechizkia. Lo Shonu Elo Shemosa Lo Gacheles Veliba. The Reisha of the Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah that said, giving to the Chereshet V'Katan an eventual damage that results does not cause obligation upon the fire owner. That is only when he gave the inept a gacheles, a coal, a hot coal, veliba, and the inept fanned it. Avol mosolo shalheves chayav. However, if he gave a torch, if the owner of the fire gave a torch, a lit burning torch to the inept, so the owner of the torch is chayav for any damage that results. My taimo, why is that? Maisav garmulo. Maisav literally means his actions. He prepared the torch, and on Daftes Omid Beis, much earlier in this Masichta, we saw the Gemara in response to the Mai Taimo, it said, Mai Taimo do Bori Hazeka. And Rashi there explained, Mizuman, it's everything for damage is set up, is already prepared. So, Reish Lakish, quoting Chizkiah, says that the exemption from damage responsibility or damage compensation is only when the inept was given a coal and the inept fanned it. But if a lit torch was given to them, so the owner of the fire must compensate for subsequent damage. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Afilu Mosarlo Shalheves Potter. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and says even the handing over of a torch to the inept and subsequent damage resulting, the owner of the fire is exempt. My taima, tzafsa the cheresh gorma lo. Tzafsa literally is the holding of the cheresh. Rashi on Daf Tesamid Bey says that the cheresh, upon taking the torch, he goes to whatever is destroyed, to lighting a pile of grain somewhere else. So we as far as the original owner of the fire is concerned, he didn't go to the pile of grains and torch it. The cheresh did, so that the original fire owner, at worst, you call him a gorem, a causative factor, but groma benezikin is exempt. V'lo mechayev, the fire owner is not going to be held responsible. Atshe yimser loy gavza. We continue at the top of Samach, Daf Samach, Silta Shroga. If the fire owner presents to a cheresh gavza, Rashi says koitzim, or thorns, dry tinder type material, highly flammable. Silta, Rashi says, are twigs. That's Eitzim Dakim, as Rashi says. Twigs, shruga, and a fire. If that's what he presents or entrusts to the inept, Dahu Vadai Maisa Dide Gormu. In that case, it's definitely his actions, the fire owner's actions, that are responsible for the damage. Sholach biyad pikeach ha-pikeach chayav. And then the Mishnah went on to speak about someone else came along and was libah, fanned the fire. Here the Gemara deals with word analysis. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok Man Detani Liba Lo Mishtamish, one who teaches in the Mishnah the word with a lamed fanning the fire, Liba, is not in error. The Uman Detani Niba with a nun Lo Mishtamish Lo Mishtamish. That version also would not be a mistake. In our Mishnah, we had a lamed printed in, but if someone had an alternative version with a nun, it's also not a mistake. Both of these words, liba and niba, have to do with the producing of air, which in our context has to do with fanning the fire. And now the analysis. Man detoni liba lo mishtabesh. Liba would not be a mistake. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, belabas esh. So you see, in the context of fire, you see the word labas, like the word liba. This pasuk is in Shmos, Paragimel, Pasuk Beis, and it is in the context of the story of the sneh, the burning bush. We continue in the Gemara, Uman detoni niba lo mishtabesh, dichtiv, bore niv sfosayim. The word niv is referred to in the Rashi on the top line, niba, Rashi says, kishe odom medaber, when a person speaks, menalnea sfosov, he moves his lips, veruach yotzei, and wind comes out. So as a person speaks, just put your finger over your mouth as you're speaking, and you'll feel a little breeze or air coming forth. That's niv. And in fact, the word novi that we use in terms of a prophet has this as the basis of the word novi, the movement of lips, in that case, in saying prophecy. But for our purposes, it refers to fanning of the fire, as we indicated, the wind that comes forth when speaking. Literally, the pasuk means he who created the movement of one's lips. The Mishnah said, "Lipso haruach kulan p'turin." Tanu Rabbanan. The Mishnah itself referred to the wind fanning the fire after the previous parties had supplied the wood and the fire. If the wind blew and fanned the fire, causing it to spread, so all the previous parties are exempt. Tonu Rabbanan, liba velipsa haruach. An individual blew on the fire, and the wind blew on the fire. Yemyesh belibuyo kedei lelabosa chayov. If in your blowing, in your fanning of it, there is enough to effectively arouse the fire, to fan it, to strengthen the fire, and then damage results, so the fanner is guilty. V'im lav, if in your efforts alone there wasn't enough, but the fire spread because the wind was also blowing. In other words, you were blowing on it, but you needed the wind to strengthen the fire, you would be exempt. Am I? Why are you exempt? Leve kezire veruach misayato. Why not view this the same way we rule regarding Hilchus Shabbos? So let's say a word about the Hilchus Shabbos. There are 39 prohibited activities when it comes to Sabbath observance. One of them is Zora. Zora has to do with winnowing of grains, where one, after threshing the grains, cracking the outer shell over the grain, grain kernel, the shell has been cracked, and the shell represents debris, and you want to separate the debris from the kernel. The grains are hurled into the air, heavenwards, and that's called zoreh. And the wind that blows when it's hurled into the air then helps to separate the chaff from the grain. Now that is, if a person does that on Shabbos, so he is guilty of Melechus Shabbos. So even though the wind is assisting. So you have the person doing an action, and the wind is assisting. And the halacha rules he is guilty. So why in the case of someone blowing and the wind coming along and assisting and making the fire burn, why are you viewed as potter, innocent? Omar Abaye. Now, you notice we have triangles. On the side of the Gemara, under our mivneh, our structural note, tshuvos, these represent answers, la-sheila, to the answers to the question, ma-shno, mas-nis, and diktoni, libso, ruach, kulan, pturin, why in the Mishnah that it teaches, I should say in this Tanaic source, it teaches that with the wind's assistance, there would be exemption. Mehilchas Shabbos, de'amrinon, zoyah v'ruach nesayat t'chayav, where if the person threw the grains heavenwards and the wind assisted, the wind, we'll say, the wind made it possible for the winnowing to take place, and there he's held responsible. So back in the Gemara, Omar Abaye, hocho v'may askinon, the source that spoke about the with the wind involvement, there is exemption, kegon shelibo mitzad echad v'libsoi haruach mitzad acher. He was blowing on the fire on one side, and the wind was coming in from an opposite direction from the other side. Regarding this, Rashi says, "Delo ahani ihu." He did not have any effect. It would appear to me that the strength of the wind was such that it was stronger than whatever he was doing by way of fanning on the fire. So he became inconsequential. His wind was in effect not fanning the fire at all. Rava Omar, and let me say the obvious, and since he was wasn't fanning the fire at all in that case, so that's why there's exemption. Rava Omar, kagon she liba beruach mitzuya, when he started fanning the fire, there was a normal force wind. His blowing wasn't enough to fan the fire. And the lipso haruach, the factoring of the wind as the causative factor, was beruach shena metzuyah. The wind picked up force, and it's with that increased velocity or increased force wind that the fire got fanned. So it was under those circumstances that the source teaches exemption on the part of the man. Rabbi Zeira Omar, kagon de tzomra tzamuri. We look at Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines. Tzomra tzamuri, loshon ishta tzamirta, which means chamimus, heat. Klomar, shelo nofach mamish. He didn't actually blow on the fire. Elo b'neshima, rather a type of breath. Kederech hamechamein b'neshimosus yodov, the einze libui klal. I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, at some point experience cold hands. You'll take your cold hands, hold them up to your mouth, and allow a little breath to come out. That breath creates heat. That's what the Gemara said, somra tzamuri, but it doesn't cause a force of wind of any consequence. And as Rashi says, Einze libui klal, that's not causing any form of wind whatsoever. And therefore, he's innocent. In other words, the man's participation in that case was practically non-existent, and it was therefore only the wind that caused the fanning of the fire, and that's why there is innocence on the part of the man. Ravashi Omar. Rashi explains the difference between Zoyra v'ruach mesayato and our case as follows. Ki amrinon Zoyra v'ruach mesayato, hani mili li'inyin Shabbos, de meleches machsheves osro Torah. The violation of Shabbos is dependent upon what's called meleches machsheves. Rashi says, Meleches Machshavos Niskaimo Machshavoso Denicho Le Beruach Mesayato. He wanted, he was desirous of the wind that blew as he tossed the grains with their chaff into the air. So the blowing of the wind was a fulfillment, a completion of his planned activity. And when it comes to Shabbos violation, the intent, the kavona, is a major factor. Aval hacha, but in our case, with the issue of fanning a fire that results in damage, where his blowing was not enough to fan the fire, groma bi'almahu, his participation is classified as groma. It wasn't sufficient to cause the damage. He was a causative factor, but on his own, it wouldn't have happened. Ugroma benezikin potter, and one who is a goreng, one who is a merely causative factor, as opposed to the actual factor of damage, there is no payment, no compensation is made by one who is a goreng alone, a mere goreng, a mere causative factor. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.